Calling all lovers of mystery and fans of a good story. If you haven't already heard me talk about June's journey, you're in for a treat. It's time to don your detective hat in this free hidden object mobile game that delves into the captivating journey of June Parker, a self-proclaimed detective on a quest to unravel the mystery surrounding her sister's untimely death. In June's journey, you get to play as June, deciphering clues and unveiling secret plots within thousands of beautifully illustrated scenes. And did I mention it's set in the glitzy 1920s? New chapters are added weekly, so you will never run out of new thrills to uncover, and you can also personalize and decorate your very own Orchid Island where the story takes place. How sharp are your detective skills? Find out when you download June's Journey on your Android or iOS device, or play online via Facebook Games. Your detective journey awaits.
Are you thinking about getting into Dungeons & Dragons? Maybe you're looking to expand your horizons as a DM or a player. If that's the case, then it's time for you to check out The Dungeon Cast, the best D&D podcast out there that helps you passively learn all about the game just by listening. Join co-hosts Will and Brian as they break down the lore of a rich multiverse 50 years in the making in a lighthearted and beginner-friendly way. They cover everything from character creation options to tips for dungeon masters. There's something for everyone, no matter how long you've been playing TTRPGs. Find The Dungeon Cast anywhere you get podcasts or on YouTube.
Hello and welcome to the IGN UK podcast. I am Alex, and this week I'm joined on my right, Daniel Krupa.
Hello.
On my left, Chris Tilley.
Hello, Bob people.
And somewhere like northeast is Luke Marley.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm very good.
A man who's never been to the northeast.
It's true.
What's the furthest north you've ever been?
The Watford Gap.
That's quite far north, though.
No, I'm lying. I've been to Scotland somewhere. Edinburgh.
Good. Right. This is my first podcast in, what, 2 weeks, 3 weeks? 3 weeks.
3 weeks,
I wasn't on the one before that, yeah.
So are we going to have a significant bump in quality?
I hope so.
I doubt it. Do you want to recap?
What's happened?
Should we do everything that's happened in all the podcasts?
Go on then, very quickly.
We got a bit of negative feedback.
I read that.
Mm. We took a beating.
We took a battering, but we got some nice feedback to make up for it this week, yes. So that's... You take the rough with the smooth.
Is that the only highlight?
Anything else happened? Did I make you laugh? Sometimes make you laugh, don't
you see, sometimes make me laugh.
Yeah, yeah. It gets the giggles.
It does, true.
We had some special guests, didn't we? We had some nice drop-ins.
Yeah, so we had...
nice drop-ins.
We had the guys from Gfinity came along after following on from the big G3 tournament in London last weekend. And who else did we have on?
Jason Blum.
We also had Jason Blum.
I was here for that one.
Was that last 3 weeks?
I was here for that one.
Were you here for when we dropped it in?
Oh, maybe not.
Well,
the magic of the podcast ruined. Sometimes we film these things years in advance.
But it's good. But this one's going to be better.
Of course, because I'm back.
Yeah, what have you been doing, Alex? Where have you been?
I've been on holiday.
You look very mahogany.
Is that why you look like a brown nut?
Yeah. I was going to go somewhere near that, and I steered clear.
So you're going to go near his brown nut?
You said I look mahogany. You said I look like a brown nut.
Yeah.
Cooper?
Teak. You look like the old man in the sea.
I was going to go more David
leathery.
Dickinson.
You look varnished, yeah.
Jeez. I don't look leathery, mother.
Not getting any younger. Where did you go and did you have a nice time?
Up your arsehole.
You wish.
No, I didn't.
Stank. Oh. Now we know why he's brown.
Jesus. Where did you go, Alex?
I went
to my fault.
The east coast of France, thank you very much. I went camping. And first night, I got food poisoning. So. Mm.
Does France have an east coast?
Oh, no, so it's west coast.
Ha-ha! Geography win for Kamali.
You got the, this beach is crap.
Yes.
It's a mountain.
Because it's Holland.
Yeah. Any tips for campers out there, for keen campers?
Book a hotel.
Really?
Yeah. It's really hard work. Yeah. The last holiday I went on, for me, a holiday is doing nothing. I actually did quite a lot of cooking and washing up and things like that.
How did you get on with the toilet situation?
There was a toilet there and it flushed.
Oh, okay. Well, but camping toilets are a little bit...
We were in a caravan. It wasn't like...
Oh, one of those.
Yes, one of those. I don't think you've ever stayed in one of those.
No, I did. I went to Eurocamp in France, actually.
Oh, yeah, when one of those
the worst week of my life.
One of those pleb carriers.
Yeah.
Yes. They shuttle up and down the highways. And some people will have
static.
And some people... Really?
Yes.
How did it get
on
there?
On breeze blocks.
I don't know. It was built there.
And some people will have you believe this podcast has lost its focus.
I know, right?
You've been playing games. And you've been watching films.
Yeah.
Let's talk about been doing our jobs.
What games have you been playing?
What films have you been playing?
I've been playing The Last of Us Remastered, which we talk about at the end of last week's podcast. I've been messing about a lot with the photo mode. Mm. I've gone all David Bailey.
So I've seen it briefly, and my first impression was that the graphics are a little bit too high definition.
Yeah, so it kind of betrays... Is it like, you know... that's my critical riposte there. Take that. I think we can all agree that, obviously, The Last of Us is a beautiful-looking game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But the bump in definition almost makes... Well, it shows the imperfections more, I think.
Yeah, I think...
And it's not an ugly-looking game, but it looked perfectly decent.
I suppose it's the equivalent to, like, if you got a super remastered copy of a film and you realised that maybe some of the sets weren't all that.
Yeah, I was thinking about Doctor Who when you were talking about it. Is it like having a remastered version of Doctor Who?
Or when you make...
It's not quite that bad.
When you make the jump to BBC High Definition, you realise Fiona Bruce looks okay, but not as good as the makeup or standard def have you believe.
Gee whiz.
That's Hugh Edwards, don't get me started on him. He is falling apart at the seams.
You're a fan of Fiona Bruce.
She's all right. Once I've got high definition.
Fiona Bruce or Susanna Reid?
Susanna Reid.
Every time.
Well, she's a Palace fan.
Is she?
I don't know much more about her, but...
Oh, but they used to have a thing for Susanna Reid.
She's an attractive lady.
Yeah. What's she doing now?
She did that.
She went to the dark side.
ITV.
All right. Again, some people will have you believe we've lost our focus.
I don't know what you're talking about.
I disagree.
What films have you been watching?
Are you done with Last of Us?
Well, I was going to talk about the photo mode, but...
I've gone then.
Is a photo mode. Right.
You can take pictures.
Over to you, Chris. I've got all for arty. I've been messing with my depth of field, framing stuff.
What's the best thing about the remastered version of the game? Is it the photo mode?
The best thing about it is it's Last of Us. That's a good enough reason, I think.
Fair enough.
There you go.
Films?
Yeah, I saw The Expendables 3 and The Inbetweeners 2.
So talk about Inbetweeners later, because that's obviously out this week.
Yeah, I mean, but they're a bit comparable, really. They're just sequels that are quite similar to their predecessors.
Right.
They're quite hard to review the two of them, really, because there's just... When you've reviewed one of the previous films, you're saying a lot of the same things, really.
You know what would have been really good? You should just copy and pasted your last review.
I talked with Rich about doing that because he was doing the video review. It's like...
This is what they did.
Just exchange explosions for knob gags. And it's pretty much the same thing. They're both good, though. They're both passable. Expendables. I did a fun interview with Statham and Stallone, which will be going live next week. And we also had Terry Crews into the office. Anyone who came to our IGN quiz, and thank you if you did come, will know that we did quite a lot of shooting with Terry Crews. He popped up several occasions during the quiz asking questions.
Went on a spree.
But yeah, we got some fun stuff with Crews as well. And the film's out on August 14th, and it's good fun. If you like Expendables 1 and 2, you'll like 3, basically. Simple as that.
Never seen one. Or 2.
No.
And probably won't see 3.
No. Antonio Banderas, I think, is the MVP this time around. And Wesley Snipes is good as well.
He's very often the MVP these days, Antonio Banderas, rather than the star or the leading man or the, you know, he's...
What do you mean by MVP?
Most valuable player.
I know that, but what context of this? Kind of
well, because they bring loads of new guys in and it's like, who makes their mark? It's hard to make your mark in that ensemble and he really stands out.
Okay, right.
Fine. But he's playing like he's come from a broad comedy.
But I think that's the thing. He's best in small doses when he's playing off like he's a sporting actor and he can do his thing. But if he's the leading man, he's like, that is too much, Antonio. Please put away your chest. I love your medallion collection.
He is Puss in Boots, yeah.
See, that's the thing that I remember him most for.
Zorro.
Oh, that's Puss
in Boots. And the gif that keeps coming on IGN about, you know, him going the whole like thing about when he's... It looks like he's...
Yeah, you didn't say any words then. You
know, when he kind of like...
the
PlayStation 4 thing. You know what I'm on about, right?
Yes, but at the same time, as an actor, you don't want to be remembered your finest work being a gif.
Especially
on IGN.
Yeah, well...
What is it?
It's like, there's this gif that keeps doing the rounds and I don't actually know the origins of it. It's kind of like the PlayStation 4 is unveiled before him and he keeps going like... Was there that's a beautiful play console, and then during with the Spike Awards that they did a version with Joel from The Last of Us. Has everyone missed all of this?
No idea what you were talking about.
Our listeners know.
Yeah, I spend too much time in the comments on the site.
But yeah, we'll have more on Inbetweeners at the end of the show.
Yes, but for now, let's move on to this week's news. And Luke, you are up first.
I am. Ubisoft have had another leak. Sad them. So Assassin's Creed Rogue has been leaked. And then it was announced later in the day with the Game Informer cover. So Assassin's Creed Rogue is the game formerly known as Assassin's Creed Comet,
yep.
which is the version of the game that's coming out for PS3 and Xbox 360, and it is out on November the 11th.
So it leaked. It's officially come out now.
They've officially revealed it. So it's
all trailer the Game Informer's and everything. Cover.
Yes, they've released a cinematic trailer as well. So... pretty much everything that's been we've been getting, you know, dribbled about has been true. So you play as Shea Patrick Cormac, who is an Irish fella.
Really?
I know. Right? Wow. And, you know,
that. Captain Obvious is arrived.
Basically,
it's not if like they're test grouping it. Patrick Cormac. Does that name say? Is it Irish or not Irish enough? I think it could be more Irish.
Can we get Noah in there? Shea? O'Connor in
can,
there?
Can you say it with an Irish accent?
I was going to and I decided not to. But Shea Patrick Cormac.
Ooh, he went kind of Northern Irish.
Yeah, at the end.
He went a bit of a Belfast lilt.
Whoops.
Political.
So basically that's been confirmed. Takes place around a similar time to Assassin's Creed 3 with links to the Kenway family. Everyone's favourite family from Assassin's Creed. And apparently it'll also overlap a bit with Assassin's Creed 4, and then at the very end you'll see how it links into Unity. I mean, the one interesting part you have is you play as an assassin for the first half of the game, and then some stuff goes down and he basically decides this isn't right and decides to switch sides and become a Templar. He goes rogue, if you will.
Yes, and then on the trailer he goes, I'm not going to do the accent.
Yeah, well,
for obvious reasons.
Is he Irish?
He is. And he's like, I'm going to follow my own creed. Boom.
I'm going to follow my own creed.
He does that and he does
hello
all
there. I'm going to follow my own creed.
Well, that's, it's not very menacing when you do it, but in the trailer, it kind of worked.
It did.
Okay.
So, yeah, November the 11th, that's out. But this keeps happening to Ubisoft.
Leaking.
Mm. I remember, I actually don't remember a time when an Assassin's Creed game was officially announced.
I don't remember that.
Probably the first one.
Black Flag.
That was leaked. Assassin's Creed 3 leaked. Unity leaked.
Well, the big question that lots of people have been asking...
Not very stealthy for a game about assassins.
The question that a lot of people ask... So this isn't it isn't coming to PC either. It's only coming to...
Did Far Cry leak?
Four. Some stuff leaked.
Yeah.
Wasn't it the...
About elephants and stuff.
Set in the Himalayas with elephants.
Yeah, yeah, that's right, yeah.
But they can that keep leaked. Secrets, though. They can keep secrets, like Siege, Patriots being rebranded and reconceptualised as Siege.
But that
Watch Dogs was kept a secret.
I do wonder...
The Division was kept a secret.
Yeah.
Done on purpose.
Mm.
But how many times can you do it before it becomes in itself?
But
like,
at the same time, we...
They always have these trailers ready, don't they?
We report twice on it, because we're like, oh, it's been leaked. Oh, it's official... Double the hits.
Well, it's official because... Oh, they had this trailer ready quickly.
The classic example of that would be... Mortal Kombat X. Mm. That was announced the week before E3. And you don't really want to announce during a conference like that. Like, our blog roll's just flying up. You don't... You know, you're going to get missed.
That wasn't leaked, though.
It leaked earlier during the day. And slightly then, again, miraculously, they were like, oh, well, you may as well have this trailer.
Right.
And it's like, wow, that looks like a trailer that you cut together instantly.
Yeah.
But yeah, so there's that, and then something else has come out today saying that there may be no multiplayer, but it will have the ship aspect that Black Flag had, which I quite like.
Basically, because we've had to make this game in a year, so we're going to use a massive game mechanic we already have built.
Yep.
It's set on the east coast of America. Does that excite you, going to New York?
The Atlantic
in
Ocean.
In the olden days.
Which isn't the west coast, just...
I get very easily confused.
And you can go to the Arctic... Where it's all icy.
Where was 3 set then?
3 was set in sort of New England, so Boston.
Bits of it go to New York. Apparently it's it's like slightly different New York.
Mm.
That's all I've got for you.
I wonder how much of the previous games you need to play to understand how it all links together.
Well,
it just feels like it's getting to be incredibly confusing.
Well, so, people are claiming then, if they've only got an next-gen console and it ties into the story of Unity, is it a matter of time until it's announced the next year they announce that it's going to be available on next gen?
They might do that. They might do the HD remaster.
HD remaster, Assassin's Creed Rogue.
But that brings up an interesting question with these games like this.
Mm.
Can you just walk in at like the fourth, the fifth episode version of the game and be able to, should you be able to play it or do you need all this?
With Assassins in particular, what they've done, there's been groups of games that have been structured tightly together.
Mm.
So, there was like a trilogy after there was Assassin's Creed 1, and then there was 3 games that kind of tied more tightly together. The third one kind of fed in, but then Assassin's Creed 4, the pirate one, which came out last year, was kind of a standalone title, and it was made by another team that almost kind of poked fun at how convoluted Assassin's Creed got. So it gave you this chance to just jump in and be a pirate. It's basically a pirate game that was using imagery and certain story elements from the Assassin's Creed universe. I don't know whether they're going to start a new period and a new cycle where it becomes very convoluted again. This rogue game sounds like more like a one shot.
Yeah.
Like you're playing as this rogue. You don't need to know a lot of the Assassin's Creed mythology, right? Because you've betrayed it all and you're kind of a lone gun kind of dude.
And it's also giving you both sides of the conflict. So, you know, that's possibly introducing you a bit more. I mean, I know what you're saying, because when Square released Lightning Returns, or like Final Fantasy 13, they did Final Fantasy 13 1, Final Fantasy 13 2, and then they rebranded the third one.
I think that's the
Lightning
worst.
Lightning Returns, Final
I think that's
Fantasy
the
13.
Worst series for feeling a sort
completely
of...
Completely, yeah. Because there are so many tropes and things.
I'd almost expect that from Final Fantasy, though, but the Assassin's Creed seems... it seems like the point of entry should
I
be
think
easier.
If you want to have fun...
Yeah, yeah, I agree.
I think all of them are structured in a way that if it's your first one, you can still have a good time. But if you were there for the story, you probably have already played the previous ones if you're that into it for the story.
It's not like Mass
I think,
Effect.
And then the other ones are appealing, like, hey, do you like pirates? Maybe this one. You're more interested in, like, you know, French Revolution. Is that a cool setting for you? Maybe get it this year. Maybe it just takes your fancy, depending on the setting, being the kind of biggest hook about it.
Yeah.
So that's pretty much all we have on Rogue. But with Gamescom next week, I'm sure we'll find out
some more. What about you, Alice? Would that get you interested or not? Like, so you're quite apathetic when it comes to the Assassin's Creed series now. Is anything going to draw you back in?
A completely fresh start.
What about Unity, though? Like, complete next-gen build?
Yeah, the stuff that I've saw of that at E3 looked interesting.
Co-op.
I'll never play co-op.
Oh, okay. Cheers.
Just the setting.
I quite like
the
ships
from
Assassin's Creed 4.
I'm so over that. It's like, really? It just feels like they invented that mechanic and now they're throwing it in every single game. It's like, enough.
Yeah.
Do something else.
They've also announced DLC for it already.
Chris is trying to make a joke. What is it?
No, it wasn't going to be a joke.
Is it not?
I was really going to ask you if you'd see the film.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's fascinating.
Because that's 2 hours and I'm done.
Yeah.
Whereas I played about 6 hours of Assassin's Creed Black Flag and I actually got really bored of doing all the pirate stuff. It's like, just let me get on with it. So, there you go. Anyway, news of a remake. Resident Evil 1 is coming out for PlayStation 4, Xbox One, PS3, and Xbox 360 and PC.
Yay!
Sad Dan Kilby, former podcast person. He's very excited. Yeah, he's over the moon. We should have got him to do a little drop-in for this.
Yeah.
I just find it
so psyched.
Resident Evil 1 was a fantastic game.
The GameCube remake, which this is based on, was a fantastic game as well.
But even that remake is now 12 years old.
Yeah.
This is... Surely it cannot stand the test of time.
It depends on how much work they've done to it.
So let me give you some details. So if you buy it on PlayStation 4, Xbox One and PC, it'll be 1080p, lovely, sharp graphics, 5.1 surround sound. Older consoles will have 720p. I still don't... Surely a PlayStation 3 can handle Resident Evil in 1080p. Surely.
Don't know.
Anyway.
We're getting into an era where we need to start, I think it's a kind of a necessity, we need to start distinguishing between the terms remaster and remake.
So this is
because this is a remake, surely.
No, this is a remaster.
Well, it says remastered.
This is a remaster, not a remake.
Okay, so a remaster would be, it is essentially a higher res version of the same code. A remake, you're doing new code with completely new assets.
Right. Yeah. And so the thing here for me is not so much the visual representation of the game, because I'm sure it looked pretty, but the game mechanics are old now. Mm. And, you know, Resident Evil 4 reinvented Resident Evil for better, in my eyes.
But that's integral to how you play that game. Like, it's
just the way that
if you read an older text, like you read a Victorian novel or something, the language doesn't flow as if you read a modern novel.
Yeah,
and I think
it's that kind of thing.
If you get rid of that, then you might as well just remake it rather than remastering it.
Yeah.
I think you get into an era where if you're going to start telling video games as art or whatever, or cultural artifacts, you want to preserve their original form, because it's rude and it's kind of disrespectful to kind of reinvent them. If that's what your whole thing is to like, this is the original, experience it, because you don't have original PlayStation anymore. This is the best way to enjoy this game today.
So I would rather they remade it.
Right, okay.
And had all of the pedigree of the original, you know, try and set out with what the original did, but with fresh game design.
For argument's sake, would you not, if there was a team, a talented team doing that, why not just make an entirely new game then?
Well,
doesn't have to be the original.
But it doesn't have to follow the original in terms of, scene by scene.
Yeah.
But, I just remember the first time you see the giant snake trying to sort of relive that.
To me, that sounds more like that's more like what they did with Tomb Raider.
Yeah.
Like, get a talent seed and maybe take it back to its roots.
Yeah.
But then that's a new thing. That's a reboot.
Yeah.
Because my God, they introduced a new term, reboot.
Because that's the other danger, right? That's the one that's always thrown around with the whole Final Fantasy VII thing of they should remake it. What if it's not as good?
Yeah.
Because as well, if it's not as good and it just damages that
brand.
I think
I'm less for remakes and more for remastered versions because because video games, unlike other things, you get rid of the old technology that lets you play them.
Yep.
It goes up in attics, you flog it, you can't play your old copies of games. Now, Virtual Console and Wii, certain downloadable titles, gain you access to old games. And I think in the future, it'll be like a subscription model. You want access to all these great classics, which at the moment are, by and large, unplayed. You might not play them every day, but it'd be cool to have access to them if you want.
At the same time, I just want to see some new games.
Yeah. I know, but
it's having delays and remasters.
It's like little kid Chris, if he was growing up super into films and he had no way to watch some of the classics, what would you do? Same with the kid growing up today. If they want to go back and play Prepper the Rapper, it's not very easy to do that.
No.
I think it's like a heritage thing. If like video games to grow, they need to know where they've been and what they've done. Otherwise, you've got a whole catalogue of games that are inaccessible.
I'm just not sure. I just don't think that... I might be completely wrong, but somebody who's just gone and bought PlayStation 4 is probably not thinking, I've got to go and get Resident Evil 1. It's people like Dan Kilby who want to reinvigorate that spark, especially
it's more all about geared to what's next.
Yeah.
And I think that's probably because it's quite a young kind of medium and it hasn't got enough history to be as kind of reflective as
films as yet. I would say that's also because if... video games rely so heavily on technology, which advances so quickly. Mm. And I do think that the mechanics will probably feel old in this game. And it's like, the remake of Ocarina of Time.
Yeah.
Loved it because I loved the original. Whereas Kilby, somebody introduced new to that game, just like, I still don't understand this game. Mm. It feels archaic the way it works. Yeah. And I can't see how
I think you're right. That's kind of like the same. I think the analogy, like an old kind of, some old films... the pacing, the sensibility to an old film, the way it's edited can feel really slow.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't know, something like Bullet, the first time I watched that, I was like, for a film that's always lauded for being like the greatest action like chase sequence, you're like, actually, it's a pretty slow movie in many ways.
Yes.
Mm. But you're right, I think the technology is the big difference.
Yeah. Because that changes, it changes all the time, constantly. So, anyway. Sad news from Chris Tilley.
Yeah, have we got any Studio Ghibli fans in the house?
Yes.
I've never seen a Studio Ghibli film.
You've not even seen Spirited Away?
That's one I've not seen any of them.
Dan, you a fan?
I like some of the work. I haven't seen everything, but I've seen a lot of the early stuff and the mid stuff. I never saw a lot of the recent films. The last one I saw was Howls.
What's your favourite, Luke?
I like Howls. I think probably Howls is probably my favourite, just because it's by based on the book by Diana Wynne Jones, which is who is a Welsh author, who I quite like.
You only like Welsh things?
Pretty much, yeah.
Leaps. Okay, well, this is sad news, and it was a strange story because it was developing all through the week. It's quite hard to explain it, actually. But it sounds like Studio Ghibli might be closing down, or might not. So the first reports...
Well, I thought they came out and said they were.
Anyway, well, the first report, the Ghibli general manager, Toshio Suzuki, it was translated as him saying the production department of anime will be dismantled. And then there was another report, another translation, saying that he was simply musing that studio production will be dismantled, but it was not a definitive decision. And then the third update was that the studio would be taking a small break to reassess the situation. People were saying it sounds like they're going to do some housekeeping there, some house cleaning or restructuring.
It's basically because Hayao Miyazaki, who was the co-founder, right? He's retiring and he's 72, I think.
Yeah.
You know, he's been there since the beginning. His son's come in, Goro Miyazaki. He's all right, but, he hasn't quite got the same.
All right.
Well, he's released two or three films and the first one absolutely bombed. And so he hasn't quite managed to capture the same spark that his dad brought to it. Mm. And there's still a lot of talented people there, but, everything about Hayao Miyazaki is just interwoven throughout every level of that studio. And so him going, I think what they're saying is it does necessitate a reevaluation of their processes and where they go next.
Yeah, I think there's two or three problems there. They haven't found someone to fill his shoes.
Yeah,
you know, they've not had a successor waiting in the wings. Mm. It costs a lot of money what they do. Hand-drawn animations becoming more expensive all the time.
Yep.
And they've refused to make the transition to CG.
And they have a lot of
3D.
People on staff, whereas a lot of the animation studios increase when it gets to crunch.
Yep.
They just keep a lot of people.
Yeah, their salaries are apparently about $20 million a year. It's they're spending, they're hemorrhaging money. And also in the last 3-4 years, they've not really had a hit. The films they've done have been really, even the good ones, even Miyazaki's last film, it was a very serious film.
The Wind Rises, right?
Yeah, it's not the kind of film that's going to get kids in cinemas like, you know, his previous efforts did. And I think he's got 3 or 4 of the top 10 most successful films ever in Japan. But it's not happened lately. So they're losing money. And I think, but it's sad. I mean, who knows if they'll come back. Or they might come back a very different beast. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if they did embrace CGI or 3D or something.
Well, I mean, bear in mind, they did work on Ni No Kuni, right? Yeah. You know, it's unclear. I mean, I assume they did the character design, but we've never really gotten to the bottom of how involved they were in that, because it was certainly pitched as, you know, a collaborative effort. But when you get into the game, there's lots of CGI cutscenes, and there's maybe about, I don't know, 6, 7, 5, like less than 5 minute, like 2 minute animated drawn sequences that were clearly done by them. And I just don't know how involved they were in the rest of it, and it doesn't really seem to have been established. But, you know, there's been mutterings about a follow-up. I think the big thing for them, and certainly something that's been drawn out, is their licensing and marketing departments. You know, their stuff sells so well.
Yeah.
You know, if they want to go into curating that kind of stuff instead of developing new properties. Because obviously they then also have to acquire the licenses to work on established properties. They don't really very often establish original stuff.
Mm.
So it's tricky, and especially, I think, you don't know how much Miyazaki oversaw all of that. And that, you never know, there could just be a massive power vacuum now, as you say, if no one's there.
But we've seen kind of Disney and embrace computer-generated animation. And
I started watching some of The Lion King with Scarlett on holiday. It does look really old.
Mm.
Like, I don't know what was the last kind of traditionally hand-drawn animation they did.
Princess and the Frog? Yeah, but that was them going back to it. Actually,
Mulan one of the later ones?
No, there was stuff after that. Like, was it On the Range? That was the one that tanked. On the Range?
Was it? Yeah.
Was the one that like halted Disney traditional animation for quite a long while. I mean, just double check on this.
Isn't there? I don't know. I think you've got to move with the times a little bit, and computer generated stuff actually improves animation, so
it looks incredible. Some of the stuff, like, you know, I've watched Frozen probably 50 times, and you know, it's a beautiful looking film, it really is. You know, the production on that movie is incredible,
and Japan bloody love that.
Everybody loves it.
I was in the charts for like 19 weeks in Japan. That's crazy.
They've released a Frozen themed PlayStation 4 in Japan,
they have, yeah.
Which is,
and honestly, you cannot get an Elsa costume for love nor money, as Dan Creeper knows, having sat next to me.
Oh God!
I went to a Disney store every morning for about a month trying to get one. I got one.
For yourself.
But they're selling for over £100.
Well, when we were at E3, you were
and you looked rubbish in it.
I know. What do you mean? Just a little bit small.
Chris, I think you reviewed the last Disney movie, and we did quite a lot of coverage on it on IGN before my time, actually.
Which one?
I think Slope and Winnie the Pooh.
I didn't review it.
I do not review it.
But I like Winnie the Pooh. I don't think it was great, though, by all accounts, the film. That's sad times, though. Really sad.
So From Up on Poppy Hill was the one that you sent me to see. And I got to do an email interview with Goro Miyazaki, who's the... And so he came, he didn't do very well, went off for a bit, came back. It was all... So I don't know. I'd kind of be interested to see what happens to him next.
But, you know, Disney survived after Walt Disney's death. It can be done.
Yeah.
Hmm? Yeah.
Lucasfilm. George Lucas hasn't died, but
I think they've seen more forward-thinking companies, I would say, though, than Ghibli have.
Yeah.
Yes.
Mm. Anyway, I think we should really move on to probably the biggest news of this week.
Bloody hell! Brace yourself.
I've seen this written down, but I actually don't know what it is. This is quite exciting to me.
So
I get too excited.
Yeah, don't know.
Blake Harris, who is the author behind the forthcoming book Console Wars, the Console Wars book. I think that's the one that the Seth Rogen movie is based on.
Right. And isn't he in the Inbetweeners?
I don't think it's not Blake Harrison.
Blake Harrison. Blake Harrison.
A genuine Renaissance man. while researching the book, he's unearthed a Nintendo character guide, which dates back to 1993, which reveals the official full name of the beloved anthropomorphic dinosaur Yoshi. You ready for this?
Mm-hmm.
Let me just click. He is called T. Yoshisaur Munchki Koopas.
That's not what I was expecting.
Let me try again. T. Yoshisaur Muncha Koopas. Which leads to the inevitable question, what does the T stand for? Yeah. Like, you've resolved a mystery.
Yeah.
Could be Tony.
Could be.
Could be Tyrone. Could be...
Tina.
Let's not do this. Let's not go through every name beginning with T.
What do you think about that? He's been held captive in an egg until Mario bopped along and rescued him. Instantly, young dinosaur and the plumber became fast friends.
Now you've missed,
together, they set out to rescue Yoshi's dinosaur pals from the wickedness of Bowser. So this is the description taken from the character guide, which also gives a genus to Mario, who is not Homo sapien. He's Homo Nintendo... Nintendo-ness.
Yeah, that took us a few takes when we did the news video on as well. Nintendo-ness.
You know what? It's even harder when you're reading it.
So does that mean he's not Italian?
Latin? What?
Mario or Yoshi?
Mario.
Well, it's Latin, isn't
it? I don't know.
It's saying he's not human.
Yeah, but he could still be...
A variant on Homo, yeah. He's still related. I think Homo obviously still related to the same overall species as us, but a slight different genus.
Okay.
I just think it's all a load of old codswallop.
What, you mean this wasn't done by Carl Linnaeus? Anyway.
Has this all been made up?
I think it's all made up. I think the whole thing's made up. I think Yoshi'd eat Mario, if I'm quite honest.
Why?
He's a dinosaur. They can't deny their nature. They can't deny their nature.
No, but not
and you know what? Then he poop him out as a little egg. I've seen it. Alex.
Not all dinosaurs eat meat, though.
What?
Not all dinosaurs eat meat.
I know.
He's turtles.
Chris, you know, he's not a Vegisaurus.
You're not?
He's not a Vegisaurus. He wouldn't sneeze on you in a friendly way.
He's Yoshi. He's really friendly.
He's enemies. Don't, and then barfs out of fire.
You've got to call him by his full name.
T. Yoshisaur Muncha Koopas.
I'll just call him T.
Hello,
Big T.
Mr. Munchie
Big T. Right. There we go.
Anyway, that's it for this week's
news. We ended with the serious news.
Yep.
Yeah.
Educating in form.
No, nice. You always have a bit of fun at the end of a news bulletin, don't you?
Oh, you do. Lighthearted.
Oh, yeah. Finally.
Kitten stuck on a tree.
Water skiing, squirrels.
What?
I don't know. It went wrong for me. I'm sorry.
Anyway, next week is Gamescom, so most of us will be flying out to Germany. Sorry, Chris, you won't be.
Yeah, it makes a change, doesn't it? I'll just hold the fort down here on my bloody own.
Well, you're good at doing it, and that's why I know that everything will be perfect by the time we come back.
Of course it will.
But while we're away, we're going to see some very exciting games. So we thought, before ahead of Gamescom itself, we'd talk about the highlights that we're most looking forward to.
Mm.
So, Luke, your very first Gamescom...
It is my very first Gamescom, yeah.
So, the first thing you need to know is you will be shocked by the number of people that are there.
So, unlike E3, for those who don't know, so it's consumer-focused as well. So, there's the consumer...
So, the first day is trade.
Uh-huh.
So, it'll be...
And that's the Wednesday.
And then, oh, this is very pleasant. And then they open the doors, and it will be nuts.
Bedlam.
Yep.
Right.
I've actually seen Bedlam on the second day. So.
There you go. Hey.
What, 10 a.m. and the doors
open?
Yeah. So, what are you most looking forward to?
Ooh... So stuff that I know I'll see. So I am seeing Mortal Kombat. Lovely Daniel has let me see that. So I'm excited to see that because I haven't actually had a chance to play it yet.
So you didn't see it at E3?
No. Okay. I didn't get a chance to go around Warner's booth.
So pray tell, why are you so excited about it?
I'm excited because they're definitely going to announce a new character, or maybe several new characters. But it's a big shift in terms of the way the game works and the fact that there's three different characters. Because usually, for me, I've said this before, but I like it for the story. So I like just playing through the story mode. If there's one character that I can't use, maybe a different style I will be able to use. But also just the character reveals what that means in terms of the storyline, because certain characters have been absent from past versions that may be brought back. I'm just really looking forward to it. It looks beautiful. I'm looking forward to kind of talking to some developers behind it and see how they came up with some ideas.
Yep.
So that's stuff that I know I'm going to see.
Yeah.
That I'm excited about. I don't know. On the whole, in terms of other things, I'm kind of disillusioned with the console games for a little bit because they keep delaying them. And
so, but you're disillusioned with the delays rather than... As no, I say, we're only, what, yes, like, 9 months into a new generation.
But you know, I can already name games that I want that are definitely not going to be out for a year.
Yeah.
I'm actually struggling to name games that I want that will be out within 6 months. And
Evolve slipped to next
Evolve
year.
Slipped as well. Times. You know, Destiny I'm looking forward to, but it's just... There's just not that much. And I think anything that gets announced now... Mm. It's going to suffer from a hype trail that's perhaps a little bit too long. So,
yeah, but you look at Far Cry, that was announced, what, in April, May? Yeah. And that's coming out this year. So that's, yeah, that's true. Really short.
It's true.
Well, until it gets delayed.
Until
it gets There could be some good things. And then the only other thing, like Blue Sky thinking, I'd quite like to see an update on Final Fantasy 15 or Kingdom Hearts 3 because both of them were missing.
Surely they'll save those for Tokyo Game Show.
Yeah. That's what I'm thinking.
Well, both. I think what's going to happen is we're probably going to have news about Final Fantasy 14 expansion, and that's going to be their Final Fantasy fix. And then I'd also quite like to see if Guild Wars 2, because I recently got back into that in quite a big way, if they've got any expansions coming. So that's everything I'd like to see.
There you go.
Really.
So you've been the man at the centre of it all, organising appointments for everyone. Yeah,
I've been knee-deep in the spreadsheet. I've got really good at Excel.
Good.
Honestly, conditional formatting.
That is sexy.
It's magic. It just automatically changes colour depending on what you put in the box. It's good. Getting aroused, Chris. I've given myself some good appointments.
That's how I've been rolling.
The best games for you.
No, it's weird. I'm doing this, so
this
I know.
What's really good actually doing the schedule is something you would consider a good appointment, somebody else might not.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I wouldn't want some of these appointments.
Yeah.
I'm glad Luke does. Yeah. No, but he loves stuff that I don't like. So that's why we have a variety of different.
What are you most tests. Looking forward to doing?
What's the I've got a 1 hour behind closed doors presentation of Bloodborne.
Oh, wow.
An hour focusing on the combat.
Okay.
Which sounds pretty cool to me. I'm really excited about that because we got to see a very brief glimpse of Bloodborne, probably like 10 minutes.
And it was really early.
Yeah, really early. Unrepresentative because the difficulty wasn't on, so yeah. They were just walking around at leisure, showing you different mechanics, but not actually going into much detail because the people demoing it weren't from Software.
Yeah.
So they were giving you very vague answers. They weren't allowed to give you any more insight to the story. So this is an hour presentation on the combat in particular. So
from,
don't know yet.
Okay.
I assume, or at least people who can speak on their behalf.
Yeah.
And it's going to dive deep into probably a bit more of the story,
yeah.
How it differs from other previous Souls games. And I just thought that game looked awesome.
Yeah.
Like, I'm a recent convert to those kind of games, but obviously this one ticks a lot more of my interest boxes, like the setting, high gothic, Victorian stuff, a lot of Lovecraft stuff in it.
Yeah.
And I thought what we saw from brief glimpse, it looked really cool.
Yeah. But it didn't, but as you say, it didn't really answer many questions.
We got an impression, but not much of an idea of how it'll actually be.
Yeah,
it looks a lot like Dark Souls, but obviously I want to see like how far that comparison and similarity stems.
Yeah.
So that's really cool. And I'm also seeing No Man's Sky. And I'm looking forward to working out what that game actually is.
So that's one thing for me. It's like, as a technical achievement, it's amazing.
Mind-boggling.
I still don't
so
get it.
So I've heard... little nuggets of what it's about in the run-up. Like, in the last few months, there's been details leaking out, and everyone start on the edge of the universe, and you've got
to
work your way into the central planet, because there's some mystery about what's on the center of the universe, or your center of your galaxy. So you've got to get there by planet hopping and upgrading your ship to get closer and closer to this thing, which is your destiny. So maybe they'll tell us more about what the actual game's, the structure of the game
you're right.
is.
It's brilliant. It's really interesting. But what's the game there?
Well, that's because... So I sat through quite a long presentation with Sean Murray from Hello Games 83, and he was saying... So he didn't say that the goal was to get to the centre of the universe or the galaxy or whatever at that point. But he did say you've got to go... and achieve something, and to do that you've got to upgrade your suit, you've got to upgrade your...
So there's got to be some impetus there, otherwise you just
wander around
and go, actually I'm done with this. This is a nice planet. You've got to be something pushing you forward.
But in terms of upgrading, how you do that is up to you. So you can do it by mining valuable ores, or you can go by being a pirate and shooting people. So how you get that resource to upgrade is the variable, I guess. But I still, like, how does it all pull together? I don't know. So that, I think that's going to be kind of interesting.
Yeah, so, unannounced games as well.
Yeah.
I think you were going to talk about a bit more aren't you?
Well, we know that there are going to be some unannounced games.
There are known unknowns, and then there are unknown unknowns.
That's right. Well, I think the problem with Gamescom is it is relatively close to E3, and a lot of developers spend so much time getting their games ready for E3 that there's very little time to actually do anything with that code.
I think it's very different this year.
Yeah.
I think the scale and the scope of the show, and it's standing within the kind of calendar window, like the calendar, sorry, is has really grown, and they're now using this as a platform to make real meaty announcements.
Yeah.
Like, there are unannounced games coming from major publishers at the show. We know that. We don't know what they are. We maybe know a couple. We knew that Rogue was one of them. But that leaked. And but even stuff that we kind of know, like Quantum Break is going to be properly revealed at Gamescom. In the trailer that they released in May, the head of Remedy Games said Gamescom is going to be our event. And it's just, you know, it's a really big stage, and you get a lot. What we say about E3, you get lost in the kind of the din.
I think those
announcements. You could own it.
Like, Gamescom is getting a bit bigger, and also the big thing that I kind of feel as, I mean, obviously we're you know, a games media website, but then you look at like the increased success of YouTubers and things because it is a consumer show. I think publishers do feel there's much more. They have much more ability to control the message, get, you know, kind of consumers hands-on with a really refined bit of code, send them home and send them, you know, tweeting, Facebooking it, just saying how good it is, and word of mouth. So I actually think they are viewing it, like publishers are viewing it, as much more as, oh, an opportunity, as opposed to E3, where, you know, we can see through stuff like that quite easily. But I think that's not to say they're trying to deceive anyone, but it's just kind of a more refined message.
Yeah, because I'm seeing Dead Island 2, which I saw at E3. But the code I saw at E3 was already like 9 months old. And so they sat me through like probably a 25-minute demo of the game, which focused purely on combat, and it looked ropey. And then right at the end they said, oh, but this is what the game is going to look like, and played 30 seconds of video. And I was like, well, why didn't you just show the game running like that? Because that looks good. So that's what we're going to see at Gamescom.
And it's the same, like, I mean, I'm seeing Blizzard, right? And Blizzard didn't really have a presence at E3, you know? And Blizzard traditionally don't do anything outside of BlizzCon, really, but they themselves are making the decision to come to Gamescom, which is a huge shout for them.
Well, they always have a big presence in the consumer area because it's just really big, and they always have, like, loads of, like, pods and people playing. Like, I think
they have BlizzCon.
Arson had a huge presence last year.
They have BlizzCon for the American audience, I suppose. This is a chance for them to reach their European kind of fan base. But I just think that, again, the fact that we are having kind of press stuff as well is quite telling. It's definitely not what it used to be.
Yeah. But I think for me, the chance to see more Metal Gear is always exciting. Mm-hmm. Phantom Pain. Again, saw a very long demo for that E3. Mm-hmm. Interested to see what else they show on that without kind of too many spoilers. And then Batman, which I haven't actually seen yet. Well, I've seen it in videos, but I've not actually seen it running.
Is it hands-on?
Yeah, I believe so.
I wouldn't mind having a glimpse at where the Order 1886 is now. So obviously it got delayed. I went to an event, I think in January, when, you know, Colin Moriarty wrote up a piece saying, you know, it looked a bit ropey, and it did look like it had technical issues, taking it back a bit. And so I'd be interested to see where that is, because that was one of the, you know, powerhouse PlayStation exclusives that they were trumpeting, and now they've gone a bit quiet. So I think that could be interesting.
Chris, what are you looking forward to? Just an empty office?
Yeah, just a break from you lot.
Yeah,
I'm looking forward to recording a podcast on my own here, where I just sit here, just stream of consciousness, just saying whatever comes in my head, eating a few donuts. Nice. Just,
Well, the good thing is we're live streaming from Germany, so you can watch all of our pretty faces.
I'm busy.
Are you?
I've got to get my head down and write some nice features.
Oh, well, if you get lonely, pop on the live stream.
Okay,
and we'll be on there.
Would you say, if I ask you to say a little code word for, would you say it?
It depends what it is.
Sausages.
If there is a way of getting sausages in, I will try and say sausages.
Oh, no, it's for me. And everyone out there will know it's for me.
I'm going to see Sausage Simulator, so.
Exactly. We're in Germany, right? So that's probably quite an easy way.
All the breakfast you can.
For better or worse. Whatever. Yeah. Anyway.
Quite good.
So that's it, Gamescom will be all over IGN next week, so keep your eyes peeled for that. Shall we move on to reader feedback?
Yes. So we thought we'd kind of start by just saying a little thank you to all the people who sent us nice messages.
After our nasty message.
After our, any feedback is good feedback.
You're right.
But so thanks to David Freeman, David Rowe, Chris Warnes, Natalie Harold, Edward Lauder and Joe Paris. You all sent very nice messages and we love you very much.
And also a group of people have started an IGN UK Facebook
They have, but
page.
We'll get to that.
Okay.
Are we not going to read out all their nice emails?
Well, we thought it might be a bit self-flagellating.
Could have done one.
Well,
we've read them all.
Yeah,
I've read them all. Yes. Nice
we have read all your emails, but we just didn't want to seem...
I've turned them into a little book that I read at night.
Seeing as the original email was all about our egos getting out of control, I thought maybe we would let that one pass. But yeah, so who's got the first piece?
I do. This is from Leonard. Leonard says, I just wanted to be sure that Sad Dan is represented on episode 250. Mm. Most of his funniest moments are on episode 66, a compilation episode.
Really?
His favourite parts regarding Dan are the story of the Greek god, the part where Dan explains how he never does use the fun guns, and his hair highlights. Do you know what the fun guns is?
Is that what he calls his arms?
He never uses them.
I've seen him type.
He definitely uses them.
The one that I remember was he was talking about a guy that he saw in the gym.
Yeah, that's the Greek god, I think.
Yeah, he was Einstein of the bodybuilding world. I think is how he described him.
Yeah.
And it is just the most bizarre thing.
Leonard would love Dan. He says it would be brilliant to get Dan back on the podcast.
The problem with Sad Dan is that he's now serious Dan.
He's corporate Dan.
He's corporate man Dan.
He's lost his sad sensibility. That's mine. That's mine. I've earmarked that one.
Just for you listening to the audio version.
We've got a box of donuts in front of us. That is totally mine.
Calm down.
Even though you fingered it, I'm eating that donut.
Right.
Can we get back to the podcast?
Yeah. I've got some things. I'm eyeballing you, Creeper. You can have the one with nail polish on.
Let's not eat on the podcast. We did that before and it didn't go well.
Anyway.
Dan, we will get him on though.
Yeah.
He's agreed.
I've got some feedback from Michael, who says he's interested to know how the podcasts are run. Does one person just run it, or are there lots of analysts shouting at you about demographics behind the scenes? Like, does he really think we've got people analysing what we do?
I think you don't realise. I think I used to listen to the podcast, and I think you feel like it's a much bigger operation. Than
what? Because our fingers
are
on the
pulse. IGN is in general.
Let's not give away our secrets here. Yeah.
But we should probably give some insight.
Yeah.
So the feedback as of like 2 weeks ago is me, which is
Well, I would say
silly.
It's taken you about 3 months to get half decent at it.
Thank you.
And it's not a hard job.
Well,
you've just got to highlight some bits.
Pick
the good ones, leave the bad ones, and highlight what you want read out.
Yeah.
And number them.
Yeah.
And I haven't even
highlighted the name.
No, it's difficult.
Well, it's okay. I can read a name without it being highlighted.
Thank you, Alex.
I know, but
it's wanting too much handholding.
Thank you,
Chris.
It just makes it flow better, which is what the listeners want when we're not looking around. Where's the name?
That's what the focus group said. They prefer it when it flows. That's what they said.
All the analytics are telling us.
Because sometimes people don't put their full name at the end of an email, or sometimes it'll be in the email address, but it'll be a funny nickname.
Well, I never know whether...
Sergeant Watter.
Because sometimes they have fake names.
Good example.
Yeah.
Is he really a sergeant?
Yeah.
He did that at the time.
I know that, but I didn't actually know.
He's a ranking member in the Watazi Army.
Didn't we rank
what?
Out?
No, he's not.
Didn't we read out another of his emails?
Anyway.
It is a joint effort, I would say.
Yeah.
If anything tends to go wrong, we blame Luke or Rich.
But we all pitch in with ideas for what news we should read. Yeah. We come up with an idea for a feature about 30 seconds before we sit down.
We always say we're going to do it on the Monday morning.
On the Monday morning we'll decide and we never
do. Things change, Daniel.
Yeah.
We're fluid.
We're dynamic.
What we've been up to, you'll notice that sometimes we don't do that because sometimes we don't do sod all for the whole week.
Yeah.
And then, other times we just talk about rubbish.
Yeah. Rubbish.
Yeah. Anyway, Chris.
I have an email from Paul Hope who says, Duck Hunt. Third email exclamation mark. Friend of the podcast. Yes, please. Free gift. Probably not. Why did you highlight that bit?
Oh, because we did the whole friend of the podcast thing ages ago. I thought that was a thing. If we read you out three times, aren't you a friend of the podcast?
I've never heard that.
Oh, that was something I was told when I joined. Well
it must be something because Paul's written in about it.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's a thing.
It's clearly a thing. Yeah.
And does he get a free gift?
No, I don't think that was ever part of the agreement.
You were right to say probably not then, Paul.
Dinner with Luke Kamali.
Don't want that.
Come on.
Paul says, what are your opinions on Scottish independence? Do you anticipate a yes vote having any impact on the video game industry? Naturally, this isn't something tackled by mainstream media. Therefore, I turn to the so-called experts. And I'm going to pass this one over to Alex.
Oh, thank you. I've got no opinion on that. If I'm 100% honest, I have no idea what the whole Scottish independence thing would mean. And I'm being honest.
Well, I mean, presumably these tax breaks that they keep harping on about would...
It might become a safe haven for all video game developers who migrate north.
Do you think?
Like Rockstar North.
And they're already there. You've already got one of the biggest developers up there. I can't see how that would change anything with them, for example.
More proclaimers on game soundtracks? No.
What's the biggest band to come out of Scotland?
Bay City Rollers.
Simple Head. Simple Minds are pretty big.
Well, they were. They must have done something more recently than that. Scotland.
Travis.
Yeah, but again, they haven't done anything.
So
is
Texas.
Lulu. Is Lulu Scottish?
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, she was at the Commonwealth Clothing, so I thought she must be.
Yeah, but so was Kylie.
Yeah, because the next Commonwealth is in Australia.
Paul, my answer to you would be, we've not really given this much thought. Maybe you could let us know what your feelings are about how Scottish independence will
affect... Let's open it up to our readers. How do they get in touch, Chris?
At the address.
Which is?
IGN UK feedback at IGN.com.
No, it's not.
IGN_UK feedback at IGN.com.
Yes. At the top of your thing. I hope it is IGN PFAC because I don't know where that is. That's up there with Trade Old Time Bar.
Is that right?
Yep.
Yeah.
Well, a couple of them today.
Coming to a soundboard near you.
So the next one is from Stu Green, who has said that he's just got funding to start an independent game studio in Warwickshire called Bearded Pixel.
Good
he
name.
He currently has three name. People working there and has enough funding to hire one more person for the environmental art. So he's wondering if anyone's interested.
I can draw.
We're all interested. Yeah.
Environments or people?
Yeah, landscapes. I'm like...
He's like Bob Ross.
I can draw.
You remember Bob Ross?
I just drew that while you guys were talking about Gamescom. I don't know, but that's what I drew. Well,
that's like is that an environment?
That's a person, not an environment.
I can't get the job then.
So anyway, he's wondering if any of our lovely listeners are interested. They can email him at graphicsstu, and that's S-T-U, at hotmail.co.uk. And so just send him and he will happily...
Surely they have to have some kind of qualification.
Well, I'm assuming that he will then enter email correspondence to vet them before just offering them...
Please, if you're serious... I don't know why I started talking like that. Please, if you're serious.
Oh, no, he's gone rogue.
But I'll tell you what is interesting.
Can I finish my sentence? Thank you. Don't just bombard him with toss.
Can I say congratulations to Stu for actually doing this?
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
What an awesome thing to achieve, and good luck with it. And let us know how you get on as well.
I wonder if he used to work at Codemasters or something.
Well, because
like
I was going to say, Warwickshire, Izzy and Leamington Spa, because when I went to develop this year, one of the PRs there who represents a lot of indie thing, apparently they are referring to Leamington Spa as Silicon Spa now because there are so many startup game companies there.
Playground are based there.
There you go. Forza. And I lived there when I went to uni. So a very nice place, part of the world.
And the mayor of Leamington Spa is the mother of someone who used to work here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Goldie's mum.
Yeah, I remember now.
Not Goldie the dog.
No.
Or the British R&B star.
He gets my train quite often.
Really?
He's not R&B.
My mum used to see him at Chamonix.
Jungle.
Is he not?
R&B.
My mum used to see him at Chamonix.
James Bond star. Goldie.
Yeah.
Bond villain.
Yes. Was that the Madonna one he was in?
Down of the Day.
I can't remember which one it was. Well, it might have been Brosnan. Yeah, no, it was. I don't know.
Or The World Is Not Enough. Does it matter?
Yes. They melded into one film.
Anyway, so he's quite old, but he still dresses like a child.
What, the dog?
He was on Strictly Come Dancing as well a couple of years ago.
Goldie?
Yeah. He went out really early.
What, the dog?
Right.
No.
Very good at the foxtrot.
Oh, my God.
Excellent.
Didn't you get an interview opportunity with the dog that won Britain's Got Talent as well?
Not an interview opportunity.
Yeah, I think it was.
How talented was this dog?
Yeah. Just sitting there going,
Pudsey. My friend's released the Pudsey movie. We could have got Pudsey into the office to guest on the podcast, and you guys didn't want it.
I wanted him.
I don't remember this meeting.
Not to guest on the podcast.
Well, I think our listeners would have liked that a lot.
Right.
Yeah.
Pudsey's still here, guys.
He's
done a whoopsie on the carpet.
He's licking his balls.
He would know. He's well trained, Pudsey. He wouldn't do a whoopsie on the carpet.
No, but I'd ask him to. And then he would do it because he's well trained. He could whoopsie on command.
He has a stunt dog to do the whoopsies.
Does he?
Yeah.
I don't think we're going to win this award.
Yeah. Please move on to the next piece of feedback.
Okay, Rishi. Hello, Rishi. Says, Duck Hunt. I have a group of friends who insist that the best game ever is Call of Duty, and don't play
the first one.
Just Call of Duty in general, I think, and don't ever play anything else. How can I get them to play some games that aren't as generic as this?
I'm the same. I think Memphis Belle is the best film ever, and I never watch anything else.
You're always going on about Memphis Belle. Bloody love it, don't you?
My missus watched Pearl Harbor and she liked it.
I
know. Alex. She even said, "You've told me that this film is so rubbish that I've not watched it." And it was on telly the other day.
It's terrible.
I know. And she watched the whole thing till like 11:30 at night.
Even Ben Affleck talks about how bad it is, and he's the star.
Look. Should I divorce her?
No, she's a nice girl.
Should you be an evangelist for things that you like, or should you let people probably dwell? If they like Call of Duty, should you just let them like it, or should you try and expand the horizons of your friends?
The problem
is, I think that's two different things. If they're only playing one game, I think it would be good to nudge them in a direction to open their minds a little more.
Yeah,
but if it happens to be their favorite game, that's all cool.
But also, like, that's where a game kind of tips into a sport. And it's like a lot of people just play one sport and they just like and they're good at one sport.
Well, don't play just one sport either.
But it depends. If they're only playing it for the multiplayer, which I'm assuming it's really hard to switch from one to the other. Yeah. People specialise in that game. They get to know how it works.
Certain reactions with it. And stuff.
Okay, and next question. Should I get Last of Us on PS3 or PS4?
PS4.
Well, if you've got PS4, get it on PS4.
There you go.
Although, turn your resolution down a little bit.
So sorted. But you get it, but you get the DLC in bundle.
You do.
You get everything.
And you get photo mode, which Krupa loves.
They're taking those photos.
Ross Miller. I recently dug out my Dreamcast and lots of great memories came flooding back, with a particular highlight being Shenmue. Groundbreaking. Why have you just highlighted that word on its own? Groundbreaking.
I got confused.
A living, breathing world well before the series like GTA and Assassin's Creed. My issue is that the game was a trilogy, but only two games were ever made. So my question to you is, what game or series has left you with a horrible, incomplete feeling, be it TV, movie, or game?
I've prepped for this.
Go on then.
Okay.
So have I.
Come on.
So I was going to say a Joss Whedon one, but not Firefly, because everyone says Firefly, which ended prematurely.
I'm going to cross out Firefly then.
There you go, Firefly. But everyone says Firefly, and then they rounded that up in Serenity. But I actually, the last season of Angel, which was the spin-off of Buffy, but then kind of became its standalone. Joss Whedon had some other projects in the pipeline at the time, and apparently the way US TV shows at the time were renewed, they did it in two waves. And he wanted them to guarantee that they would give him a renewal in the first wave. And they said, well, we can't. And he had some other projects on the back burner, and he basically tried to play hardball with them and said, look, you either renew it in the first wave or I'm done. And they basically refused to do it, but they did say to him, look, we'll renew it in the second wave. And he said, fine, no, I told you. And so he ended the series prematurely. So he ended it. It was meant to span more series. But so a lot of the endings feel really rushed, and he was building up threads that were going to span a couple of series, characters who, you know, had died or stuff was going to happen to them or going to come back and all of this. And it just all got cut very short and things had to change. And it was really starting to find its feet as a very, because it started off as a spin-off from Buffy, but it became a very, very different show by the end. And I just feel like it was killed a little bit before its time. So I think probably Angel is the big sadness.
Can anyone else answer that question with just the title of the show?
So
that was good.
It was comprehensive.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Rainbow Six Vegas. The end of that game. Well, it doesn't feel like the end of the game. The last quote in that game is, this ain't over by a long shot. So you think, okay, there's another level. And it just cuts to a screen that says to be continued. So you've got to wait for Rainbow Six 2, which came out a year later or something like that. It's like, what?
That's annoying.
That at least goes. It came out, though.
Yes, that's true. And it's not the same thing, but disappointing endings. Arkham Asylum was a brilliant game, but the mutated Joker was absolute tosh.
Difficult.
But that's a different thing. That's bad endings.
I know that. I know that. And that's why
we could do a feature on that.
Prefaced.
We could do a feature
that's
on that.
That's another talking point.
I feel we've done that before. We've talked about.
We'll do it again. If we've forgotten, the listeners might have as well.
I can't even remember what we did 2 weeks ago.
Because you weren't here.
I know, my Max.
I've had an absolute skin full of booze, that's the thing.
There was a TV show called Rubicon that was on a couple of years ago.
It's about the drink.
It was 24, but without the action. It was all about, like, it was very, very interesting.
Is that just people in an office getting pissy with each other?
Well, you're just filming a clock.
It's kind of like what it was, but it was very highbrow what they were talking about. I didn't really understand all of it, but that got cancelled when it was just getting good. Carnival. Did you ever see Carnival?
Oh, I do know Carnival. Two seasons, weren't they?
Yeah. That got cancelled early. That was a very interesting
show. That's a shame. Yeah, I forgot about that.
And there was something I really liked called How to Make It in America, which wasn't brilliant. It was basically Entourage crossed with Only Fools and Horses, and they cancelled it too soon. So those are my three.
I've gone with film. I've interpreted the question again slightly differently than everyone else. it's films that almost felt like there was going to be a third one and they missed their opportunity to make it at the time, so it's never happened. And ever since, there's always been that question like, oh, there should have been a trilogy. Mm-hmm. So Wayne's World 3.
Mm-hmm.
Gremlins 3. Mm-hmm. Ghostbusters, obviously, especially what's happened this week. And then also the most recent one. I always felt there was going to be 28 years later.
Yeah. I'm very surprised that hasn't happened.
Yeah, it just feels like you're waiting for it. It's in prime to happen.
Yeah.
Danny Boyle talks about it, even coming back. It just never happened.
Bill and Ted would be a good one to add to that
list.
It
feels like a lot of these films just like could have had a third one if they capitalised on the moment and the momentum.
Yeah.
And they left that a little bit too long and it became impossible.
I will add Mortal Kombat and Ace Ventura to that list.
I'll just put that in pencil for now.
Think about it.
I don't think we needed another Ace Ventura.
No, we definitely didn't.
Yeah.
And it just kept getting better and better.
Or another Bruce Almighty, Evan Almighty, or whatever the heck they were called. David.
Ooh, good point. Maybe there should be a film.
No, there shouldn't. That's the point of it. No.
That's why you said that.
Any more feedback?
Yeah. Don't you have another piece of feedback? Who read that one out?
Yeah, I do. From Kyle Barrett. Sorry, it's a hard one though because it's
one from the
if I read it out just as it's highlighted, it wouldn't make sense. So that's difficult. Kyle says, just wondering what your thoughts are on the announcement of the David Brent Office movie. He talks about the context of following the Fawlty Towers of the model of quitting while you're ahead.
Yeah.
Maybe, you know, it was a good thing that Brent did that. He says, I'm open to the film as long as Stephen Merchant is involved because Ricky's most recent work without Steve, i.e. Derek, has been poor. Thoughts, guys?
I don't think you should do it.
No.
Time's moved on.
Move on.
I think it's fine for him to do it if they're clever enough with it. I think, you know, for instance, Steve Coogan has sustained that character Alan Partridge by doing different things each time he's brought him back. And you and I talk about it, like some of the stuff he did, like Mid-Morning Matters, some of the best Partridge stuff. It's really, really good.
Yeah.
I do think doing this makes him a bit of a hypocrite, though, because he always cites quitting while you're ahead.
Yeah.
And he's not done that. So he's not stood by the principles that he always used to like flaunt. Like, oh yeah, we quit while we're ahead. There's only 12 episodes of them and Christmas specials. Well, you're doing quite a lot with him now.
Yeah.
I worry about 90 minutes of David Brent. It's that cringe comedy, isn't it? And how much of it you can take.
Well, I can take it
with Partridge. I don't know how long I can take it with Brent, because even when it's like a 45-minute episode, I find him really hard to...
I think there's a bit more to the Brent character, though. It's when he fancies himself as a bit of a philosopher as well. That's not necessarily cringe comedy.
The little grins at camera, though, are fine for half an hour, but an hour and 20 minutes, if he's still doing the little...
Well, I saw him in concert a few months ago now, and I wonder if they were filming back scene the stage stuff at those concerts, and the whole thing will be he's got all this redundancy money, he's ploughed it into the going on tour around Britain, like funding his own tour.
Yeah, he's working for a cleaning product company at the moment.
Yeah, that's what he does in the Christmas specials. Can I ask you a question, Alex? Who does he tampons? That's quite...
But as Kyle says here, and it's not been highlighted, but it is an interesting point. he talks about the fact that Tim and Dawn might pop up in it.
That'd be great.
But their story was so wonderfully tied up at the end of the Christmas special.
With Alison Moyet singing.
Do we need to... Yeah, only you. Do we need to revisit it? It was just a perfect little TV moment.
That is a good point. Thanks for highlighting that, Chris.
Yeah, it's a shame it wasn't highlighted officially.
And finally, Jamie Martin has written in to say, just to let you know that since you shouted us out a couple of days ago, the IGN UK podcast group on Facebook has grown to over 100 people. It's gaining more momentum every day. The atmosphere in the group is just like the podcast, and it's great to meet other lovers of the podcast and gamers from our fair nation and around the world.
I like you took a little breath after that.
And then, so he
says... I'm all for people meeting up on there and just making love.
So the link
because
is...
Because of us.
Make love,
while thinking of us.
Make love, not podcasts.
Make love,
I'm glad we're making podcasts.
www.facebook.com/group/IGNUKpodcast if you want to get involved. And why wouldn't you?
Should get involved.
What's going to happen on there?
I don't know.
People are going to share their face.
It's going to be like Grindr.
As long as it's not, yeah, as long as this isn't some sort of sting operation.
Anyway,
I'm going to create a profile and join and just mess with them.
I love Grindr.
Let's move on.
Can we all do that?
To the games and films out this week, shall we? Only one game out this week, Ultra Street Fighter 4, which scored a 9 out of 10 on IGN.
Whopping, a stonking 9.0.
It is the best version of the genre-defining fighter, according to Vince Incognito. That's not his name.
Can't pick him out of a lineup.
It's amazing. So it's got loads of new content. It's very, very perfectly balanced. And loads of new characters. So if you like Street Fighter, you will love it.
There you go.
Movies?
High praise indeed.
I just remembered, I forgot to look up the third film. So the third film this week is, I think it's called In God's Pocket.
It's God's Pocket.
Philip Seymour Hoffman.
Is it his last film?
No, it's not his last film.
He's in Hunger Games, isn't
he? I might be going to Toronto to see his last film, actually. Oh. Called The Drop with Tom Hardy. And Hunger Games. Yeah, Philip Seymour Hoffman. I think John Slattery directed it. Am I right in thinking that?
I think so.
And Christina Hendricks is in it as well. Is it that one?
Yeah.
And Tom Butler, who used to be on the podcast, said, it's, I saw him the other day, said it's a bit slow.
Right. There you go.
We've got the official non-IGN
review.
I was meant to look it up, but then I had to get them in between his review up.
Okay.
I was in a rush. Planes. Planes, Fire and Rescue.
Did anybody ask for a sequel to Planes?
No.
Well,
no.
John Lasseter did. Well, he was drunk.
Did anyone ask for a spin-off from Cars? No.
But Cars was hugely successful.
It was coming.
Not really, but it was just a quick release. But we have a review on the site. Jim says it's a marked improvement on its predecessor with a better message and production values. And he said it's a heartfelt but formulaic tribute to heroism.
There you go.
And I guess if they're rescuing people from fires, that's what that's talking about.
Very noble. Very noble.
And The In-Betweeners 2, which we touched upon earlier in the film.
Podcast.
Oh, God. Can we just stop now?
So, same as before. A few funny moments.
Yeah. It's Australia rather than Malia.
Yeah.
A few Australian stereotypes laughed at.
Yeah. How many times are the words clunge said?
There's not a huge amount of clunge in it, actually. Really? Bants is the word that seems to be in this one a lot. Yeah, but it's making fun of the fact that they use the word rather than...
Some negatives,
there's
though.
There's some misogyny in it that I found a little bit disturbing, actually. I mean, it's not like girls are... sort of painted in a good light in the show anyway, but along the way there are some nice girls that they meet. They just don't have any luck with them,
right.
And in the last film, you know, they hooked up with a couple of nice girls, they met a nice group of girls. In this film all the girls are awful, including the girl that Simon hooks up with, who he's now dating, and she's just the most unpleasant person.
She's really
and
nice.
It makes no sense that this nice girl from the first film would just suddenly be horrible. It's just to kind of push the plot forward, but I just
to make him single again,
I don't know, I found it all a little bit that side of it unpleasant.
Right.
But that said, I still laughed a lot.
And so, out of the three films, In Between Us Two.
Yeah. Well, I don't know much about one of them anyway.
Okay, there you go.
In Between Us Two.
Highly recommended from Kristen.
Yeah.
That's it for this week's podcast. Thank you all.
Thank you.
And, thank you.
We'll be back. We will be back next week. Not with you, but we'll be.
You've committed to it now.
We're coming live from Germany. Not live.
Not live.
But we won't be dead either. So we will be in Germany, but without donuts, and I'm going to go and eat a donut now. So, bye!
Cheerio.
Bye, guys!
Hey there, it's Rachel Ballinger, and I am extremely excited to invite you to Rachel Uncensored. It's my podcast where I sit down and get real with my friends and celebrity guests, where we talk about all sorts of topics. And sometimes we might be under the influence when we do so. We cover things from personal stories to hot button issues. And it's the only place on the internet you can find an uncensored version of me. It's a side of me that you might not have seen before because it's not the most family or brand friendly. But don't worry, I'm still sort of slightly a decent human being. If you're intrigued, then make sure you check it out. New episodes drop every Wednesday. You can find it on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Trust me, you won't want to miss out on the fun and candid conversations we have here on Rachel Uncensored.